Welcome to Country Roundup. I'm Radio Rita. This is our opportunity now. We finally have the moment to speak with Mr. Ellis Nasur.
What do I do now?
You just do nothing. Oh, just put the, let me push the button.
Right, then you can hang up.
Okay, I'm going to introduce Mr. Nasur. Hello, Ellis, how are you?
Good morning.
Oh, I'm excited. It's all working. All the stars have lined up and all the buttons are in the right place.
So I'm on with you now?
You are on the air.
Well, I want to say thank you to you and Karen for making time for me, and of course to Carla, your station manager. You all have been extremely well, and I've discovered a great radio station.
Okay.
I want to say hello to my brother John down in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Okay.
He's been listening, and he wrote me an email and said, I found my Tuesday morning country
music wonderful.
Show now.
That's really nice. I want to tell our listeners that a very little bit about you, but
okay. You
are an international arts journalist, and you have a background with the New York Times. And in fact, in 2006, you were named a Person of the Year by Time Magazine. You are an author.
Well, let me just go back and clarify that. There were over 300 people. I was just one of them.
But you still, I was not one of them. I was around in 2006. Nobody nominated me to be a person of any year.
It was quite a nice honor. Yeah.
Well, now we're going to talk today about Patsy Cline and some of the detail that you may have, or that you definitely include in your book, Honky Tonk Angel, The Intimate Story of Patsy Cline. And let me tell our listeners that you have graciously offered to give away a few of your books. So if I thought maybe as we're talking, if anyone listening has a first name of Pat or Patsy, and they may want a copy of this book, please give us a call, 609-397-1620.
I also wanted to support the station, since you're a not-for-profit and such a great station with so many varieties of music.
Yes.
And you're on 24 hours a day, which
yes.
is amazing.
Yes. We were, I know that we were earlier at the streaming end of things before the commercial station was, that is our local commercial station. So we're very proud of that, and it's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love. Everybody enjoys it.
Well, I have an actor friend of mine and his wife listening in London.
Oh,
and
my.
An old friend from Vicksburg, Mississippi, who lives in Paris, who's listening in
Paris.
Oh,
wow.
But
I'm very excited.
I was listening this morning, and I don't know if you ever mentioned Cowboy Copas.
No.
But I wanted to congratulate you for bringing up Hawkshaw Hawkins and Cowboy Copas, because many times when they talk about the horrible plane crash, they only mention Patsy.
Right.
Randy Hughes, who was flying the plane, was Cowboy's son-in-law. He married Cowboy's daughter, Kathy,
uh-huh.
who was kind of just coming up the ranks as a singer. But Cowboy Copas had also... He was very big in country. I think they called him the gentleman of country music.
Hmm.
And one of his big pop hits was Candy Kisses.
Right.
And then Hawkshaw, what a gorgeous voice Hawkshaw had. I think Hawkshaw could have been a huge pop star. And he had pop crossover, which was very interesting to me.
I find it very hard to say his name. For whatever reason, it doesn't come out right.
When I have written it many times, I have also misspelled it, so I have to really watch
it. It's definitely not a name you can say five times fast.
No.
But I did find a little tidbit of information about him when I was doing my research that he actually replaced or took the seat that would have been Billy Walker on that plane.
And,
I never heard
Billy's
that.
To Billy's dying day, he always counted his blessings because something came up at the last minute. I think that his father was very ill, I think that's what it was. His father was very ill, and he wasn't able to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's fate for you, you know.
Well, let's get on now to Patsy, and I don't know if I said it earlier, but anyway, right at this moment, for the next week or two at least, the Bucks County Playhouse is staging a show, a musical, Always Patsy Cline,
right.
And it's got, it's not her biography, it's not her life story, it's basically...
one night.
One really night. But it's gorgeous. The girl who plays Patsy sounds so much like her. Her name is Carter Calvert, and she's got a long background, of course.
And a long background doing Patsy Cline.
Yeah.
And, of course, the wonderful Sally Struthers, who's been doing this show for, I guess, about 10 years off and on.
She's funny. She's very funny.
She's funny, and she's also one of the nicest people you could ever, ever meet.
Yeah, she was very interactive with the audience, which you don't always expect, you know, or anticipate. And the audience responded very well.
Now, one of the things I don't think any of them knew until maybe a few days ago when I told them is that the show closes on September the 8th, which is the anniversary of Patsy's birthday.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. And so I was very happy that we were able to tie in with Farley's to do a kind of an, you know, Q&A discussion and book signing right around the time of the anniversary.
Yeah. Now, I have to ask you how you became so interested in Patsy that you wrote two books, actually. How did you ever meet her in person?
Very briefly. When I was at the University of Mississippi, I was kind of director of social affairs, which means I didn't do a lot of studying. Uh-huh. And I came up with the idea of saving money for the universities in the South by booking shows like on a five-night basis.
Mm-hmm.
And we booked the Johnny Cash Cavalcade. And on one of the nights, Patsy had been touring with Johnny Cash's Star Cavalcade. That was the only time I actually got to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
But then in 1973, I had left the Times and I was working at MCA Universal Studios, and the music division didn't have a lot. They were just starting to get Elton John and having a lot of success with The Who. And they really wanted to bump up the country music division, so they sent me down to Nashville to work with the great genius producer, Owen Bradley, who was the mind behind so many of the great singers, Patsy especially, but also Loretta Lynn, Brenda Lee. And Owen came from a big band background, and it was kind of interesting that he became so involved in country music. But he said to me, why don't my artists have gold records for their record sales? So I went back. And I found out that a couple of them did deserve them, including Loretta and then the Patsy Cline Estate. So that's really kind of got me interested in doing a three-part serial on Patsy's life with her husband, Charlie, and with her mother, Hilda.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to the first book. And the second book in 93 was a collector's edition hardcover. But we actually started all over again. And I wrote a new book, incorporating a lot of this stuff from the first book, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was much younger, my next-door neighbor in Mississippi was Louise Seeger.
Mm-hmm.
And she always talked about her friendship with Patsy Cline and letters that they exchanged. And that piqued my interest.
And that's the Louise
That's the night that Louise and Patsy shared together. And they became great pen pals. And just prior to Patsy's death, Louise also saw her again in the Houston area when she was on a bill with Jimmy Dean, who Patsy started with early on in Virginia. Jimmy Dean had a very big regional TV show out of Washington, and Patsy was his big star.
Well, it was cute. The play was cute, and how it developed that friendship with Louise.
Yes,
I thought,
and
it was,
you know,
good
what?
Too.
It's so funny to say this, but it's 4 pages out of my book.
I know. You told me that. That is amazing, but it was
a good four pages.
It's
a very loving friendship, and the fact that they became such instant friends shows you so much about Patsy. Patsy really never met a stranger, according to all the people that I interviewed for the book. Over 125 people.
Hmm.
They always spoke of Patsy as being very open, doing anything for anybody that needed help, and the fact that she was never jealous of the women coming up through the ranks. In fact, she helped them.
Mm-hmm.
When Patsy was on the road, one of the young people that she met, in addition to Brenda Lee, who she kind of rescued on a tour down in Texas, and when Brenda was 12, Barbara Mandrell was another youngster coming up the ranks. And then, of course, Patsy really encouraged Dottie West and Loretta Lynn and Jan Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like a family, and Loretta and Brenda and Dottie, they became like sisters with Patsy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what would I say? I before I get into that end of it, I just wanted to say that she was just innovative and creative, and she was bold, and you know, she took the bull by the horns kind of thing.
I disagree with you there. She really wasn't. Patsy really only wanted to sing Hillbilly and Yodel.
Mm-hmm.
It was Owen Bradley who convinced her that she had the voice to do much, much more. Harlan Howard, one of the great people mm-hmm. who wrote songs for
right.
her,
mm-hmm.
said Patsy could have sung operetta if she had put her mind to
mm-hmm.
it. But Patsy and Owen would fight in the studio. When I say fight, friendly fight. He would want her to record pop tunes that were being written for her
mm-hmm.
or pop tunes that had been turned down by other people that he thought were perfect for her. Like I Fall to Pieces had been turned down by a number of people, and he felt the person who could really have her big pop hit was Patsy Cline. And mm-hmm. Patsy disagreed with him vehemently. And they would make deals when they would come to the albums. He would agree that he could have six and then she could have six. That's why you find her album so evenly based between pop and country. I mean, I think it was a great idea.
Well, when I said use the word bold, I kind mm-hmm. of meant, in a sense, spunky. She stood up for what
spunky.
She believed in. You know,
Brenda Lee told stories, Bill Anderson told stories about when they were on the road and the promoters didn't pay them, that
mm-hmm.
Patsy would just go and confront them and say, you know, give us the money now, and in the future, if you want us on your show, you pay us up front. And that became a tradition in country music.
Mm.
Patsy always spoke up for her rights.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it was a different time as well. The
yes,
era was
absolutely.
Different.
And the field of country music was really a family then, too. It wasn't like today. They really were encouraging to each other.
Yeah, I read somewhere in my searching that she was the first female artist to headline her own show in Las Vegas.
Not quite true.
No?
You know who was first was Judy Lynn.
Okay.
Judy Lynn, I think, was born in Idaho, but she actually even appeared on Broadway. And in a couple of musicals in the 50s. But she made her big name in California and in Las Vegas. She appeared on the Strip
mm-hmm.
probably from the mid-50s for about 20 years in her own show. And she was the first to kind of start losing those cowgirl outfits and
right.
wearing this, you know, the nudie costume.
Right.
But Patsy Cline was the first solo country music artist because she had been, Judy Lynn hadn't been recording
mm-hmm.
In Nashville as Patsy had been.
It's interesting that Judy Lynn then was the first to headline her own show in Las Vegas, but
absolutely.
I never heard of Judy Lynn.
As far as my research goes, Judy Lynn was the first female.
Hmm.
But I know that Kitty Wells and, trying to remember Kitty's husband, when Kitty first started, she always appeared, you know, like as a duo with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And they did appear on some of these big country music shows in New York at Madison Square Garden and Carnegie Hall. And they may have actually played Vegas. But no one was on the Strip as Judy Lynn was. Even Patsy never played the Strip. She played downtown.
Uh-huh. Well,
and what I always thought was amazing, she did two shows a night, 35 days in a row. How exhausting that must have been.
Yep. You know, one of the distinctive things, I think, about Patsy Cline is, her, of course, her sound, her voice.
Yes.
And maybe I'm only commenting on things that I've read, and maybe I'm wrong, but it was saying that she had developed, somewhere along the way, she had developed a very serious and significant throat infection.
It was rheumatic fever when she was
yeah.
a kid, and that changed the tenor of her voice. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and the thing that struck me about that is, Freddie Mercury from Queen, he had
yes.
also a very unique sound, and he attributed his sound, his uniqueness, to the fact that he had extra teeth.
You're right.
You know, he was born
yes,
with extra teeth.
You're right.
Yeah. So if you have, you know, just letting anybody know, if you got something going on that isn't normal, maybe it's a good thing.
we'll have to do more research. Maybe more people should come forward, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just, it's, you know, your voice. I follow a country singer right now, and I meet him when I see him. And when I met him last month, or whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, he was whispering. And I said, what's wrong? He goes, I can't talk. I'm saving my voice. And after the play the other night, I just briefly met Carter. And I said to her, your voice is gorgeous. How do you do this every night? And she said, I do not talk. And so that's the secret, I guess. You know,
it is a habit among many singers. Yeah. But in my experience working here, and like in film and TV and theater, it's amazing how some of them they can go out and yell and scream and do, and then they can walk on the stage and sing like an angel. So everybody's different.
I guess,
you know, just like you were saying, everybody's really different.
Yeah. Well,
who was the singer that was whispering? It wasn't Bill Anderson.
Oh, right? You would not know him, but my listeners know him because I talk about him all the time. His name is Jimmy Allen, Jimmie. He's a current country artist, although the sound is not the country that, you know, Willie Nelson did and all of that. But
I'll try to find something.
Oh, I will send you an email and remind you of his name. He's a wonderful man and a good guy and
sweetheart. Is he from the region? Is he from
From Delaware. But he's had a number one song and he's working on a second one right now. So
wish him my very best.
Yeah. Thank you. I will.
Maybe he'd like to have a book written about himself.
Oh, he definitely would. If he wouldn't write it himself. He's got very big hopes for a lot of things. But I wanted to ask you how you interacted with Patsy's mother and how I guess she was very receptive to meeting you and giving you the interviews that she did.
Not at first she wasn't. No.
No?
When I met Charlie in Nashville through Billy Deaton, who was the manager for Farron Young, and Farron owned the newspaper Music City News, and that's where my three articles prior to the book proposal appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And Farron said, you ought to write a book about Patsy Cline. So I said to Billy, I said, well, can you put me in touch with Charlie? And he said, well, he's always, you heard of Tootsie's, I guess, on Lower Broadway in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I hung out at Tootsie's for a couple of nights, and I finally got to meet Charlie Dick. And we sat in his car for about three or four times over 5 days,
mm-hmm.
and that was my first interview. And he said to me, you should meet Patsy's mother. I don't know why I thought this way, but I thought probably Patsy's mother was dead.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a big age difference between Patsy's mother and Patsy, and Patsy always kind of considered her a big sister.
Right, right.
And so when I contacted Hilda, I found out that after Patsy's death, Charlie didn't treat her very well, not as Patsy wanted in the will that was never respected. But Patsy had written a will on hotel stationery while she was on some tour, and she was actually leaving Charlie a car, and everything was going to her mother and the children.
Mm.
And even though Hilda took care of the kids a lot after Patsy's death, Charlie was there's really no need to go into that. I try to be fair to both of them in the book, but it's hard to write and not see how he treated her, and she was really hurt by all of that. And after Patsy was killed and buried in Winchester, several people from the country music business had contacted Hilda and wanted to come up and put flowers on the grave, and they said, you know, we're going to bring a photographer. And she said, no, if you want to put flowers on the grave, fine, but no photographer. So she kind of felt, I think, that she had been taken advantage of. And all those gorgeous costumes that she made for Patsy, almost every single thing you see in photographs that Patsy has on was made by Hilda.
Yeah.
And they were sitting in closets, and it's a shame that they didn't all end up in a museum, because the variety, and I mean, Hilda could make anything.
Mm.
That Las Vegas gown that you see a lot,
mm-hmm.
the black beaded gown, everybody thinks that's a designer gown, but Hilda made that.
Wow.
So Hilda and I got along well, and she was going to be a co-author of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started interviewing Gerald Cline and people that Patsy had dated and some of the women that Patsy had as friends and growing up, things started to come out about her early days that Hilda didn't really want out.
Mm-hmm.
And I figure if you're writing a biography, you don't have to tell the complete truth.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to leave some things out.
Mm-hmm.
especially if you find they're going to be hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many things that she wanted me to leave out that I said, Hilda, I said, if you're going to write a biography, I said, it's not fair not to give a full picture of the person.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually she chose to drop out. I continued to offer her the percentage that we agreed to, but mm-hmm. she even refused that.
Mm-hmm.
And but we spoke on the phone occasionally, and I wrote her on major occasions. And
have you ever visited Patsy's home in Winchester?
Oh, yeah, many times,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And the gravesite, too. And that's where I can give Charlie a lot of credit. He really established a very visible tribute to Patsy as you enter the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a gorgeous bell tower at the back. And the grave itself is just so simple. But I would imagine like 30, 40 people a day visit that gravesite.
I think I was down in Winchester during the summer, mm-hmm. and they have a big week down there. And
yes.
unfortunately, her house was not open during the hours that I was there, so I did not
get
to see.
Was this for the big September? No, this is September now. They're getting ready to have one of those big events.
I was impressed. They go all out. It's a very big deal. It's a lot of really good people down there.
Yes,
and it sits somewhere here that Loretta Lynn and Dottie West were instrumental in erecting or having built a bell tower that plays at 6 o'clock every day. I don't know if it's Patsy hymns. If they play hymns at 6 o'clock, but it's a tribute to Patsy Cline.
This is something that you read recently?
Yeah,
then?
Yeah.
Well,
but that doesn't mean it's right, because you corrected me already.
The bell tower has been repaired because for years it couldn't
okay.
play.
Okay.
And when the gentleman in Nashville was opening his Patsy Cline Museum, I had spoken to Jimmy Nicely in Winchester, who has tried to carry on Patsy Cline's legacy in that area for most of his life. We tried to get Mr. Miller to buy that bell tower to put down in the parking lot of the museum. I don't think he was able to do that. But Loretta Lynn and Dottie West had nothing whatsoever to do with the bell tower. That was local people, funded by local people.
Oh, we got to get in there and correct that information on, you know.
Doc Madigan was the pharmacist that Patsy worked for before she made it on the opera. You know, when she was a teenager, she worked for Doc Madigan's drugstore. She was an ice cream scooper.
Wow. Well, you know, Patsy was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry in 1960.
Yes.
And we are kind of getting down here to the end of the time. No one has called in named Pat or Patsy, so I will just put it out there.
I do want to let you know that the home that Patsy and Charlie found that she called her dream house has been beautifully renovated, and it's used a lot in the Patsy Loretta TV movie that's going to be on Lifetime in October. But if you call ahead, you're able to at least see the music room and the downstairs den where they spend most of their time.
Well, I want to, I'll just put it out there to whoever is listening right now. If you would like a copy that Mr. Nasur has donated of the book that he wrote about Patsy Cline, give us a call, 609-397-1620, option 5. And I will also tell you that he is going to be at Farley's Bookshop this coming Saturday from 1 to 4 doing a book signing. So you get I'm going to hope to be there.
I hope so.
At least
to
say
to
hello to you, yeah.
And we're going to do something. We're going to do 12:30 to 1:30, and then at from 4:30 to 6, we're going to do a Q&A and also a book signing. And by the way, I would like your listeners to know that you're going to furnish me with the winner's name, and I'm going to autograph and personalize the book. So I'd like to do that for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and I want to thank you all again. Thank WDVR for having me on, and it's really been a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, thank you. You are going to be again interviewed here on WDVR by Mr. Shep Cohen. Is that not right?
That's correct. We're going to do that just prior to the TV movie in October.
Oh, goody.
Well, but I would like to mention that Les Leverett, who was the WSM Radio Grand Ole Opry photographer for like 45 years, and most of the photographs in my book are by Les, he's going to be interviewed by Shep also on September the 13th, two nights before the PBS Country Music Series starts to air. Well, and that's 16 and a half hours over 2 weeks, and it is absolutely incredible.
Wow. Well, Shep is an excellent interviewer. You're going to have a great time with him. And I thank you so much, Mr.
And I'd like to also thank your station manager, Carla Van Dyke, for having me with you both. And
thank you.
Hello, Karen.
All righty. We'll be in touch.
Thanks, ladies. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Same here. Bye-bye.
And my best to all your listeners.
Thank you.